Let's do it, because it's going to be aggressive. I'm not a fan of Poland's or the site. So.
It's very Bradley. Though I do think it's fascinating.
By the way, Bradley, these are my glasses. And Bradley, when we were doing his wardrobe, he said, can I just wear your glasses? So we got them.
And that's what I was. The funny thing is, on
and
the one
Downey
sheet,
wore my glasses in due date. They always
This
did.
Is your thing.
That's my thing.
This is now your directorial positioning. Is doing a second one of these kind of like having Obama take out the picture of bin Laden with the eye shot out? Are you doing a victory lap? Is
this a victory lap? No, I mean, I think you know, I was excited to do a sequel to this movie. We had such a great time on the first movie. And you're right. There's a little bit of revenge just in the making of the movie, I think, just all across the business, and particularly with people like you.
Well, I remember actually very specifically you saying to me, you're like, this movie's going to perform overseas. And everybody thinks it's not, and it's going to be just another one. And you $190 million international,
That's right.
Which I think is number two only to Jim Carrey.
That's right.
And Bruce. So are you ready to kick Bruce Almighty's ass this time?
I don't know. I think this movie's going to do very well overseas as well. But more specifically, I remember you telling me even before the interview started, saying, you know, Warner Brothers has this idea that your movie's going to do $100 million, and no offense, but I see it topping out around 60 or 70. It's a good movie. But there is a limit on an R-rated comedy like this with no stars.
You have so much better memory than
and
I do.
You went on to tell me, and by the way, I saw Land of the Lost, and it's a pretty good movie. We talked about it. I remember your wife was filming.
I like that movie.
And you started telling me how brilliant Land of the Lost was, which I didn't like, and I love Will Ferrell.
Right.
I love Brad Silberling. I'm not being a hater.
I
actually just didn't like the movie. And you sort of trying to antagonize me into telling me it was a bad move to open up against the Land of the Lost. Cut to, you know, we do $45 million on the weekend.
Yeah.
You thought we were going to do $60 million total. I will say, having read your site here and there, you might be the worst box office prognosticator on the planet Earth, let alone that has a website. Literally. You are wrong 99% of the time.
That's so not true.
And you also have this
I'm wrong about 20% of the time, but it's those
you
movies
have
that
this
antagonize
bizarre
people.
Attitude that you know things about the business that you really are in such a distant way in the business, and you know numbers and things and ways to, and what makes a hit, and Due Date performed okay. Due Date made $220 million worldwide. Knocked Up, big hit, right? Made $217 worldwide.
I had the same thing to say about Knocked Up.
That was a huge hit.
They consider it a huge hit, yeah.
That's a huge hit for an R-rated movie. Knocked Up was a massive hit. Due Date was an astounding hit for Warner Brothers. Yes, in the shadow of The Hangover, you might not say that. But and I'm only talking numbers because I know you love to talk numbers on your site.
Well,
your site,
international on that movie was great.
You're out of control wrong all the time. So
okay.
I don't even know why I'm doing this.
So what number are we going to do on Hangover 2?
I don't know. I don't make box office predictions.
Because I predicted you way high, apparently.
So tell us what your prediction is.
Well, people already told me that I'm way high on your movie.
Okay. What is it?
Apparently I've gone too high.
Well,
I've gone
now
out
you
of control.
Probably, now you've jinxed us. What did you do this
it's
time?
It's trouble. I think I had you guys up at, what are you, the last one you were at
See
four
that?
Or something?
Bug in my wine. It's white wine.
God.
It's going on.
It's like being in Thailand. You were at four, it was about four last time?
We did
410, something like that?
No,
yeah.
Again. We
See?
Did, we did 475
475.
Worldwide.
So I think I was up to like six and a half, seven. And I think if you're opening
high.
Domestically that, over 85.
Yeah, that might be high, honestly, and I'm not going to get involved. That seems high just because, you know, it is there is a limit of R-rated business, I think, that you can do even on a big movie. But
why? Is there?
I don't know. I think there is. There's just a point where certain people just don't see R-rated comedy.
So we're going the opposite direction this time.
I don't know.
I'm being too kind.
I think you, yeah, I think now you're just trying to jinx us. I think you just dislike filmmakers.
I just want to destroy every filmmaker
I
can destroy.
Yeah. What do you like? What do you like?
I like a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
What do you mean, what do I like?
Like, what movies do you like?
I anything that's good.
Anything
I like
that's
The Hangover.
Good. Right.
I like The Hangover.
Did you really?
I did.
You saw The Hangover and you said to my face, well, he goes, it's pretty good. Warner's has this really pie in the sky.
Well, box office and,
no,
and
but,
good
but,
are
but,
different issues.
But you also, you've told me to my face, and I was okay with it, that Land of the Lost is a superior film. And
I
defy
that?
You to find three people that agree with you on that, that it's a superior film. And again, I'm not
knocking.
I'm only
Lost
talking about that movie because it opened up against us.
But I really said that was
yes.
a superior film.
And your wife was behind the thing, poor woman.
I need to go back and
having
look at
the
this
nod,
thing.
Pregnant. She didn't even want to be there.
I don't think I
actually Anyway,
said
it's nice to see you again.
Nice to see you again, Todd. It's good to see you're coming out swinging.
Yeah.
So, did you have fun?
On the movie?
On the movie?
honestly, and it sounds cliche, we have the best time making these movies. But we have fun on my movies. I mean, people describe it when they visit the sets. The inmates are running the asylum because we just have a lot of fun making these films. And I will say, and I'm not delusional, I know people genuinely cannot like the film, and that's okay, whatever the film is. But they always do say, boy, it looked like you guys had a great time making it. And we do. We just have a blast. You wake up every morning and I think, all right, my goal today is to make Zach Galifianakis laugh. How am I going to do that as we're driving the set? And, you know.
Did you feel that way about doing what you did from early on?
It's how
was it always that?
Yeah, it's how I've always treated doing comedies. I mean, I read very early on a quote, it's important to set the tone of the movie on the set of the movie. And it's something that I've always adhered to. And listen, we make comedies. So far, that's all I've done. And I very much adhere to that quote of, like, it's not brain surgery. We're here to laugh. We're here to make people laugh. And, you know, let's just, it just feels like it's a good vibe on the set.
So easier this time or harder because you have baggage they're bringing into it?
It was way easier. It was way easier because we all knew our roles so specifically on a sequel. I've never made a sequel before, but I would imagine that they are always easier in that respect. The actor, if Zach wants to talk to me about backstory, I just say, go home and watch the first fucking Hangover. There's your backstory. Don't talk to me. It's like, you don't need to.
This is like a director's masterclass.
I'm in a mood. I've been doing press all day. This is my third wine, and I'm just not in the mood right now.
So I hear you.
I'm a little tense.
So what about writing? Was that challenging? Because obviously you had to deal with staying with what you had and at the same time taking it to another place.
You know, somebody, I don't even know if somebody ever said this, but I heard, or I think I've heard, you want to recreate the experience without remaking the movie.
Right.
And that always is something that stuck in my head, in that we did adhere to the structure of the first Hangover in this movie. I don't even know if you saw it yet, by the way.
I have.
And
it's no Land of the Lost, but...
Oh, my God. It's not the funniest movie.
It is. You know, the funny thing about this month is the only two good movies... I haven't seen Kung Fu Panda 2, so I'll take that out of the equation. But the only two good movies in May are your movie and Bridesmaids.
Oh, good.
And your movie is... that much overall much better than Bridesmaids.
Well, as you know, as you might imagine, our movie is we just wanted to make the male version of Bridesmaids. That was our goal.
You did an excellent job.
Yeah,
well, the funny
you.
Thing is that movie isn't really the female version of The Hangover.
No, they just
but
sell
marketing
it that way.
Hook, yeah.
I get
it. Turn it into
All's Fair in Love and War.
Melissa McCarthy could be Zach.
Yes.
But outside of that,
I haven't seen it because we've been finishing this movie and I've been, as you know, I did three movies back to back to back, so I've been on a little bit of a tear, and I haven't seen a lot of movies, and I know that movie's good, and I'm excited to see it. But I'm glad you saw the movie, and I'm glad you liked it. But what I was going to say is we really adhered to the structure of the first movie, obviously intentionally, because I felt part of the thing that made the first film special, yes, it's funny, yes, those three guys have great chemistry, was this idea of it's also a mystery, that people are leaning forward on their seats trying to figure out how this all happened. And I definitely like the idea of doing another investigative comedy, which is how I kind of describe it, but because ultimately it is an investigation.
So did you go through it and go, okay, we're referring back to the first movie, but let's not do it too much, and it's a little much here?
I mean, there's a balance, and you know, and I think people that see trailers only, they think, oh my God, it's the same movie. It is not the same
movie.
No,
it's not the same movie.
At all. And yes, it follows the same structure. Born Identity 2 probably followed the same structure too. I don't know, but it is a very, very different movie. It's darker. It's funnier. I think it's a better film, quite honestly.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot your question. I really am a little drunk, so I don't know. You've probably done other people that have been a little drunk.
Quite a few.
Yeah.
Usually
they're
British though.
Okay.
But no, just the thing of doing, like, because I think one of the things that really works about the movie that's kind of was almost surprising was that you really walk that line between referring back to the original movie. I mean, early, the first act, there's a lot of reference.
Of course.
But then it's there, and there are little kind of specific jokes, but it doesn't get to be where you're just recreating
the
movie.
Yeah, well, good. I'm glad you thought that. And yes, so to answer your original question now, I remember, is the writing process was just a series of, like all writing is, trying things, throwing it out, rewriting, and just finding that tone where we're recreating the experience without remaking the movie.
And does a lot change on the set when you're on this movie?
You know, not as much as people think. I'm not a big, you know, people always think, oh, it's a comedy, you must improvise a lot, because I guess they do that in comedies. we don't do that, and part of the reason is I try to make the movies look cinematic and look like movies. And I feel like when you do a lot of improvisation, it ends up feeling a lot like a television show, because you have to basically set up three cameras and shoot it like you would a television show, because I never know what this guy is going to say to this guy, and I want to catch it. So we do improvisation, but we do it in the morning before we start shooting. We just put it up on its feet, and we start making things up, and I let Zach inject lines and Bradley and Ed. Then we kind of refine the pages. Then we go shoot the scene. So it's not as much improvisation as people think.
And is Zach...
You know, we don't shoot... You know, I hear comedies, they shoot 1.8 million feet of film.
Right.
And I've read that. No, and that's, like, amazing. I can't believe it. And it's not even a negative, but we shoot maybe 400,000, 500,000 feet. So it's very different. It's very, very much shot like a movie.
And is the look of it, which you were just referring to, is that something you've... Do you feel like you've improved? Like it's been part of
I think as a director, and I think all directors are constantly improving, and I think the one thing that Larry, who's my DP, and I talked about a lot in this movie, and I've even gone as far as to talk to the marketing department at Warner's about, and you'll see it in the posters and the ads, it just wanted to feel really hot and sweaty. And there's a lot of browns and yellows and sweat, and we really talked a lot about a color palette that felt very... yellowish and brown and hot, and you know what I mean?
Well, Due Date also had a very strong color palette.
Yeah, it did. It did. And it's just been something you experiment with as you get more confident with the comedy part of it and with, like, okay, I know I'll get the actors there, you're able to sort of concentrate more on some of the other aspects that, you know. I mean, if I look at my first movie, Road Trip, that very much looks like a TV movie to me now that you know, I've kind of pushed it a little further and, you know.
Well, you don't do the single anymore.
Right, you know, and I realize I'm not going to shoot. Yeah, exactly.
So, but this movie is really pretty beautiful.
Yeah, and we never I never like close-ups in comedies. I just hate singles. And in my first movie, I did a lot of them because I was covering my ass in the editing. But now I realize comedy plays better wide, plays better in a two or a three shot in this case, and you just have the confidence to let that play.
So does all the conversation about this movie in terms of cameos that happened and didn't happen and would happen and wouldn't happen a distraction, an irritation? Is it marketing?
It wasn't so much a distraction because we were off in Bangkok for most of it. It is a very interesting study in A, the internet, and B, the lack of being able to fly under the radar. I mean, part of the fun of making a movie like the first Hangover, we just flew completely under the radar. Mm-hmm. So much under the radar that you thought we were going to open to $4 million.
No, wait a minute.
But that was an exaggeration.
Yeah.
But we were flying under the radar on the first Hangover. Yeah. And, of course, when you're doing a sequel, and all sequels have this problem, is suddenly you're on the map and you got people with cell phone cameras everywhere, including Bangkok. So when Bill Clinton rolls up with a 15-car entourage to visit the set, some guy snaps a picture, and the story on CNN is that Bill Clinton is starring in The Hangover 2. That didn't happen, but there's nothing you can do about it. You just let these things play themselves out.
He just wanted to go out on the boat with you guys.
He just came to hang out for a day. Now, of course, I said, Mr. President, forgive me for asking, but would you do a little part in the movie, and which he quickly, quickly shot down.
So what?
He said, absolutely not. You realize I'm the President of the United States, right?
And what the hell was he doing there?
This is The Hangover Part 2. What was he doing there? He was in Bangkok doing a speech.
He's just friend of Brad's?
No, we went and saw the speech because we were into him. And he invited us out to dinner. Huh. We had dinner with him. And then he said, hey, I'm going to stop by the set tomorrow. Is that cool? And we're like, absolutely. So it was really fun.
Did you shoot the vast majority of the film in Bangkok?
Yeah, most of it.
The interiors were done there also?
Or? Everything, except a few pieces, obviously, that were shot in L.A. for L.A., like, you know, dentist's office and da-da-da.
So how was that for you?
Bangkok was the greatest city in the world for me as a guy living there. I was there for months. As a filmmaker, it's very difficult. Just logistically, it's very crowded, it's chaotic, and it's very hot. And all that stuff finds its way into the DNA of the movie, and I think helps. But it makes for difficult shooting. They don't understand the symbol or the power of an orange cone. So when you put up four orange cones on the street here, that usually means don't go down that street. Mm-hmm. Somehow there it meant, what's going on down that street? I think I'll drive my moped down there and take a look. And we're driving 80-mile-an-hour cars down streets, you know, doing a chase. And they just didn't understand the significance of orange cones. It's not their fault. It's a cultural thing.
Is there a Bangkok Film Commission that tries to make
there
it
is.
Easier for you?
There's a Bangkok Film Commission. The government was involved. The prime minister came to set. I mean, it wasn't under the radar there either. And They were all really helpful. I just think it's more of a cultural thing.
So is Bangkok just like you were sitting there thinking, what do I do about a sequel? And how can I go anywhere but Bangkok? Is it?
No. For me, it was very much, okay, Las Vegas was the fifth character in the first Hangover, right?
Right.
And when you say the word Las Vegas, it just sounds like trouble. Mm-hmm. There's very few cities, when you say the name, they just sound like bad decisions are going to get made there. And I felt like Bangkok is one of those cities, and I think we needed that. You know, there's not a lot. You know, I love New York more than any city in the world. But when you say the New York, it doesn't mean one thing. It means a lot of things to a lot of different people. Bangkok just sounds like trouble.
So did you feel the due date was already kind of...
Look at that. It's like a double...
This president's coming.
Clinton's coming to see you again.
Yeah.
Looks like a cock is what it looked like flying through the air. So due date was already kind of like ready to give birth to it or to go start doing it. When the first movie came out, or right after the first movie came out, or was that?
Yeah, no. When the movie came out in June, the first Hangover, and I was already prepping due date to start that August, and then we went and made that, and then.
So was due date easier to get made than the Hangover at that point?
Yeah. Well, it was easier to get made. I had Robert Downey Jr. Quite frankly.
Right.
It makes it easy, but also just of course the Hangover had a lot of heat, so they were willing to go do another R-rated comedy with me. Yeah.
So it was an easier experience altogether.
Due date than the first Hangover for sure.
Yeah.
And then the second Hangover was easier than even those.
Well, the second, but is there pressure when it comes to the second one, or do you?
Well, like I said, I feel
the
opposite.
It's so easy that you're.
Well, there's pressure because you want to make a great movie. There's always pressure when you make a movie, but I kind of looked at it the other way, which is like I said before, I think there's more pressure when you make a movie and you're going, God, I hope somebody's going to turn up to see this movie, than a movie like The Hangover 2 where you go, okay, I think they want to see it. We just got to make something fucking funny.
Do you feel that way in general as a director? I mean, is the same? Do you feel the same kind of pressure you did when you were doing Old School?
Yeah, I mean, oddly, I'm not big into the numbers, even though we started talking about numbers. But I will say that the ability to keep these movies at a very low budget, comparatively with other Hollywood films, really alleviates the pressure. In other words, if I was making a movie where the budget was $150 million, I think I'd feel the pressure a little more. I've never made a movie that cost more than $85 million ever. And I don't necessarily want to.
Right.
Because somehow, that's kind of the average budget in Hollywood. And that way you just float under the radar and there's not a lot of, you know, with these guys who have $200 million tentpoles on their back, that's a lot of pressure.
So you don't have Jim Carrey disease where you need to go make a sci-fi thriller that happens to have a big comedian in it?
And no.
I'm not going to take Zach to space?
No, I like doing our little movies really funny and having the freedom to just really fuck around on set and do what we want.
And where do you get your pleasure at this point? Is it the, when the response is so strong?
I get my pleasure like at this. Press junkets like this, doing endless amounts of press and being asked, what's the hardest thing about shooting in Bangkok? I mean,
but your
you
film,
haven't done that,
but your film has been, the original Hangover has now been seen 5 trillion times on pay-per-view, right? Is that the Comcast?
20 billion.
20 billion times.
Yeah, the most downloaded movie ever.
So does that... Do you get off on that at all, or is it just another toy?
No, I don't. I mean, I get. Listen, the filmmaking is far too expensive a pursuit for it to be a hobby. I don't care what filmmakers you talk to; everybody wants as many people as possible to see their movies. That's just the way the film business is. You're making a movie because you want people to see it. If you don't want people to see it, you write a book. Again, I'm drunk, but. You make a movie because you want to show it in an audience with a lot of people. So I get off, to use your expression, on a lot of people seeing the movie, of course. But it's not really the numbers of it. As much as it is, wow, we sold that many tickets in Ireland, in Germany. That's amazing. This is, you know, we were out there sweating and the blood and sweat you put into a movie. And it's like people are seeing it.
So you have no urge to like blow it up, or you have no urge to like go do a heavy drama using your power as a director now to...
I have an urge to do other things. It's not that I only want to make comedies forever, but right now I see real value in making people laugh. I subscribe to Sullivan's Travels, Preston Sturges' film. There is a true value, and I can't tell you how many people come up to me or email me and say, I saw your movie, it put me in the best mood. Or I was so bummed out, I didn't even want to go to this screening, I saw your movie, and I was just happy. There's a real value in that, and I don't take that lightly. Like, I don't think, as much as I joke about, oh, we make these retarded little movies, I like hearing that it affects people's moods and it puts them in a good mood.
And not to get too personal, but you in this picture, because of the first movie, this picture is paying for people's houses. People are getting paid big numbers. They never got paid before. You made a huge amount of money in the last movie. You kind of went from being nicely successful to wealthy person. Is that change anything, or is it just?
I mean, not personally for me. I mean, right. As you say, I was nicely successful before The Hangover. That nicely successful was more successful than I ever thought I'd be in my whole life. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't really personally change anything. And as far as the actors and the people, I mean, I'm not that's not something I think that we're all thinking about too much. I really don't.
You don't get off. That's another phrase. But you don't get excited by being a fountain to your people. You don't.
No,
that's somehow you're creating.
I like providing jobs for. I mean, I've worked with the same crew practically for 7 movies. Mm-hmm. I like that they always look to me for work, and we're a family, and we go and do it. And in that respect, I like it. No, that's not really part of it, I guess.
So what was the first assembly of this movie like for you? Was it horrifying the way first assemblies tend to be for people?
You know, it wasn't, because we had a very tight schedule on this film. We were still shooting on New Year's Day, and it comes out on Memorial Day. You normally, on a comedy, you have 23 weeks of post. We had 17 mm-hmm. weeks. 6 weeks, that's like dog years in editing. It's a lot. So we were 6 weeks shorter. So my point in it is, they were editing in L.A., my editor, Deborah Neal Fisher, and Mike Sale. I had 2 editors for the first time because of this tight schedule. Uh-huh. They would FTP me scenes. I would give them notes by email. Uh-huh. I'd get new scenes. So when I got back in that first assembly, it was not an abysmal wreck. It was pretty well constructed. I mean, in fact, I screened my director's cut for the studio, I think, 4 weeks into the cut.
God.
I mean, we were on fire. I have not slept in a long time.
And how was that showing it to the studio for you and showing it to an audience?
Well, I don't show it to the studio like that. I do it at an audience screening. So they never screen it alone in an office or in a little screening room. They come out to Glendale. We get 500 people that don't give a shit about a short post-production schedule, don't care how much you spent on it, and don't care about any of that stuff or how hard it was in Bangkok.
Right.
They just want to laugh. So we just cross our fingers and we put it up in front of 500 people in Glendale, and the studio's seeing it for the first time at the same time they are. And it went great. I mean, it went really great. So then you go back, you tinker, you know, move things around, and you just keep going.
Big sigh of relief, or did you kind of know?
Huge sigh of relief. No, that for any filmmaker that does comedies, because I know a lot of non-comedy directors don't necessarily even test their movies, mm-hmm. but I don't think you'll meet a comedy director who doesn't put their movies up in front of an audience. And I know them all, and we're friends, and that is always the most pressure you feel when you make a movie, is that first screening. Because, so, you know, you write it, you direct it, you edit it.
Yeah.
It's not funny to you anymore. And you might have just lost yourself in what you think is a good joke.
Uh-huh.
And suddenly you're putting it in front of an audience and you're like, what if this doesn't work at all? And, you know, of course things don't work and other things play bigger than you thought they would.
So tighter after that, or?
What do you mean?
Then you just go tighter.
Yeah,
tighter?
You just tighten it, readjust. Sometimes you move scenes around.
And how long ago did you actually lock the picture?
I think we locked it about 4 weeks ago, because there's a lot of, you know, stuff to do after locking it.
Very close.
Yeah. April 29th. That's when we locked it.
So, but everybody's kind of happy and smooth. And
everybody's happy, and the movie's playing huge at our screenings that we've done in New York and L.A., and we've done just random test screenings in the middle of the country and wherever. We just played it for the first time in the U.K. 2 days ago. It was huge.
Well, the funny thing is, for a comedy, it has size. Which is like a summer thing.
Yeah.
Where, you know, first one was kind of smaller a little bit. This one you have big, beautiful shots. You have all that landscape.
Good, thank you, yeah.
It's a different feel that way.
It has a little muscle. Harvey Weinstein saw it and called me and he said, it's the most muscular comedy I've ever seen. And I know what he meant by it, and I love that compliment.
Yeah.
And it just, it felt bold and it just felt confident. And I always remember that because it just came to me.
Do you have people who are specific people that... Are the people who you go, oh, they said it was okay, I'm feeling good about it?
No, I don't have that, because for me it's always the audience. The audience is the people that draw the line for you. People always say, what's the line that you have? Because your movies push the envelope, and in my head I'm always like, it's the audience tells you what the line is. When you start screening it for them, it becomes very evident what the line is. But it's always great to hear from people like Harvey or yourself, you like the movie.
Well, the funny thing is, in this picture, it is raunchier. And it is less raunchy. It is
It's funny because people always use the word raunchy, and I always hate that word, but I know why they say it. But for me, raunchy always, I think of bathroom humor, and we never do bathroom humor. I literally have a personal thing against bathroom humor.
But usually a dick is in a bathroom.
Well, I guess that's not bathroom humor. To me, bathroom humor is like going to the bathroom.
Right.
I don't even like to say the word.
So, those Shija jokes.
Yeah, I don't like
though
those.
There is in the Bridesmaids.
They have that in Bridesmaids.
They went there. There's a bathroom joke.
And more power to them. I just never go there. What's up, man? What's he doing?
He's letting me know that we're 25.
Oh, okay, sorry.
It's okay.
I'm a little on the edge today. There's a lot going on.
We'll get a first AD out here. So, yeah, they actually went for the Shiza humor in the Bridesmaids.
It's and it probably shocking. Works. I just personally, it's funny. I find it honestly gross. I have a hard time doing it. So I never do that. But I guess movies can be raunchy in other ways, and I suppose that The Hangover 2 is raunchy. Yeah, I suppose it is.
But in some ways less. I mean, it's an interesting thing. There's some moments that are, you know, there are moments where I think almost the first movie, I'm more comfortable with a 13-year-old seeing it than parts of this movie.
Right.
Though overall, this movie, I think I'm more comfortable that kid seeing it than... It's a weird mixture.
Yeah.
And there's more sentimentalism, I think, in this picture.
There is. And there's more darkness, and there's more of an explanation, and there's more stew. He has a demon in him, and we explore that. I'm really genuinely... Because I'll be honest with you, when I did that interview with you 2 years ago, I was nervous. And when you said the movie's going to do $70 million or whatever... I also, in the back of my mind, believed, like, you know, he could be right. It might not really connect the way I'm hoping it's going to connect.
Right.
And on this movie, I'm just so excited for people to start seeing it because there's so much chatter out there that you just can't stop. And I just want people to start seeing the movie. I'm really excited.
So what will you do on the Monday after your massive opening?
You know, the problem is we're off to Europe doing press
more
all
press.
Over. You know, so we'll be doing press, which is always the case. I mean, when the first Hangover opened, I remember I was in... the UK. When Due Date opened, I was in England, in London, and I think again on this we'll be in Berlin, but you know.
So how long do you have on the press road before you're done?
Just another I think we'll be done by June 1st.
Okay, so come June 1st.
June 1st.
Or July 1st or whatever it is. What do you are you going to take 6 months off and just breathe?
I'm going to breathe. I'm not going to do anything before January 1st. I'm just taking some time off, gonna live a little, recharge the batteries, and really just think about what you want to do next or what have you.
And will studios executives come and throw pearls at your feet and
I don't know,
beg you for the next movie? Or?
No, I mean, listen, I have a deal at Warner's. I mean, I'm on the Yankees as far as I'm concerned. The Warner Brothers is the best studio in town. They respect filmmakers more than any studio in town. They take chances with more directors more than any studio in town. So the way I see
it, you weren't feeling that quite so strongly when the first movie came out.
I was feeling it the way they stood behind it and sold it, you know, but
it was hard to get this thing.
It was hard to get it made, and I understand why. Yeah. It's a comedy starring people that they didn't really know yet. And so, you know, it is a business and I understood it, but right now I feel like I'm on the Yankees, being at Warner Brothers, and, I love it there. So it's not that studio executives come to me. I think that it's pretty clear that that's who I work with, and I love working there.
And is there really any negative answer possible on this movie for you?
Negative answer?
I mean, is there a response that you're going to go, oh, that wasn't good enough, or
no?
Or is it really?
No, I think it's. I mean, yeah. I guess there is. I don't know. I haven't thought about it, but I think we're going to be pretty happy.
I think so too.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Good to see you.
We need to get you some more wine.
Yeah, I know. I was out of wine, so the thing just sort of petered out.
That was it's.
And I will say, you know, I did visit your site, like I said yesterday, just to see what you're up to. I don't know what you did, but it looks horrible.
Thank you.
What happened?